Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Time and Room Podcast, the greatest, most exciting lacrosse podcast in all the land, all about lacrosse, featuring my buddy Coach Dane Smith from St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac, Maryland. My name is Eric Bickle. I'm one of the sports junkies on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. and NBC Sports Washington. Dane, of course, played at Robert Morris, was a two-time captain there, and is currently the head coach at St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac. Coach, how's it going, buddy?
Good, man. Happy New Year. Happy, know, we took a while to get this thing back off the ground after the New Year, but trying to plot our way along. And
we just got
to
get it on the calendar. We just got to get it on the calendar and just keep knocking it out.
I know.
The holidays. We had the New Year.
New Year and mission deadline was just this past Friday for my school. And so that was a, you know, busy one. But I think we got something exciting. You know, we're trying to roll out as the lacrosse seasons, the college seasons at least, roll out their schedules, trying to bring in different coaches here from different conferences and kind of hear what's going on. So we obviously got Greg Raymond, I would say in studio, but we don't have a studio, you know, over Zoom here.
We have virtually Bart's head coach in studio.
Yeah, exactly. So my wife's makeup chair is where I do the podcast, if anyone is wondering. But yeah, so good to be back, man. I'm hanging by a thread, but I'm good.
Well, it is exciting. You know, I think in the last couple of weeks since we've been on, the Southern Conference has put out their schedule. I mean, they look like they are ready to rock, man. They're going to play 15, 16 games.
Yeah, your son should have stayed at Bellarmine.
Yeah, right?
He might be playing 16 games this year.
Yeah, but his conference, the MAC, has put out their, I guess it looks like some of the basics of their schedule is going to be all conference stuff, but that looks like that's going to be a go, so that's exciting. And more every day, we're getting more and more schedules out there, and we're going to, by hook or by crook, we're going to get a season. At least at the college level. And I know mostly, you know, in the high school level, that's going to happen too. So you're still waiting in the wings to get your deal solidified, but I know you're pushing. So
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, no news is good news in many ways, but, you know, just trying to plug my way along and make sure that our guys are prepared. You will not be, you know, one thing I'm kind of thinking about now, you will not regret being prepared no matter what the season looks like.
Right.
You'll have regrets if you're not prepared. You will not regret, you know, preparing like you're going to play a 12 or 14 game season, and whatever happens is going to be out of our control. But Ryan Day, I'm an Ohio State fan, just said his mantra was fight. You know, when he got a season taken away, it was like, I'm going to fight for whatever. And look what happened. He gained a season back. They went to the national title. And so we're not at the point where we have to fight for a season, but I'm certainly going to be an advocate for our team and for all teams. We need to be playing across the spring and not do it cavalier, but be smart. And we're not going to go down that path. We say we're not going to do it.
Yeah, so we're not going to do a whole Corona thing. But you got your vaccine. You got your first dose.
Yes, exactly.
Took a shot. Went in there like a man. Took it.
Yep, exactly. I went there last night. You know, honestly, it's like when you sign up, you feel like you've like almost won the lottery when they say, "Oh yeah, you're
so crazy."
You're good. Yeah. I thought it was like fake. I like Google the place. It was in it's like, I forget what the hospital was called. I'd never been there before, about 30 minutes from my house. And But yeah, too easy. Went in there and feel fine. Felt fine last night. Feel fine this morning. And
now, do
all
you
good.
Get
so,
an early crack at it because you're an educator?
That's correct. Yeah. So in the state of Maryland, we're in phase 1B as far as who can be vaccinated. 1A was like 75 and above, and obviously front. I think healthcare workers. Right. Don't quote me on it. You can go to Montgomery County's website or whatever it is to find out. And then 1B, I think, was 65 and above, and then any educators. And so I had to show proof of my employment.
Right.
And so I did that last night, and I get my second dose February 8th. So
you know, say, hey, we're ready to rock. Let's go. What are we waiting for? Yeah.
That was really my mindset at the moment. I wouldn't have been so gung-ho. I plan on getting the vaccine no matter what, but you know, I would have been a little bit more hesitant, you know, no rush for me. I didn't feel like I'm, you know, at risk in many ways, but whatever I can do to make sure, you know, keep the needle moving forward. I want to be part of that.
That's right. Poke whoever you need to poke to make this happen.
Yeah.
So listen.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. We got a great interview coming up with Coach Greg Raymond from Hobart. Just an unbelievable story, an impressive guy. And I wish you could see how well he dressed. But just trust us.
Yeah, he dresses really well. He does. Yeah.
I mean, I'm wearing an old t-shirt. I'm showered in 2 days and the guy looks like $1 million. But yeah, don't go anywhere. When we come back, we have the head coach at Hobart College, Greg Raymond. All right, guys, welcome back. It's our pleasure to introduce our next guest from Corning, New York. He's a graduate of Johns Hopkins University, was a 3-year team captain, and as a senior, the Blue Jays went 16-0 and won a national championship game. He played 3 seasons professionally for the New Jersey Pride of the MLL, but got to start coaching for the legendary Coach Bill Tierney at Princeton. After 2 years there, he moved on to Drexel to become the defensive and recruiting coordinator, then went back to Princeton for 4 years as a defensive recruiting coordinator before becoming the head coach at Hobart in 2013. He has more career wins than any head coach in Hobart in their history at the Division I level. He's 5th on their all-time win list. He's led the Statesmen to 5 NEC tournament appearances. He's won an NEC regular season title and an NEC tournament championship, and he's taken him to the NCAA tournament. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Coach Greg Raymond. Coach, how's it going, buddy? Thanks for joining us.
That was great, man. I appreciate all that. Thank you.
Hey, it's a great resume.
Yeah, if you need to feel good about yourself, you just give Eric something to read, and he can really pump some smoke.
I can call you on Sundays this year, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
My mom's not picking up the phone, I'll call you off.
Yeah, there you go.
So let's talk a little bit about how you ended up where you are. First of all, you're from New York. You end up at Hopkins, so that means you were a stud. What was the recruiting process for you like, and how did you end up at Hopkins?
You know, great question. It was much different back then, of course. You know, I think being in this business over these past 15 years, you notice how quickly the recruiting landscape changes. It was a different process back then. It was slow. It was paced out. And I think there was probably less dramatic relationship building with a coaching staff. You know, I was a guy that was connected to an official visit, really. My recruiting process was where could I feel most at home on that official visit? And, you know, full transparency, I didn't see – Coach Hawes was the head coach at Hopkins at the time. I didn't see him on that trip till Sunday before I went to the airport. I didn't see him. I saw, you know, a couple of the other coaches. I hung out with the team, and you know, honestly, I thought maybe the landscape being so much different than Corning, New York, in Charles Village, in Baltimore, was a big attraction to me. You know, I come from, my friends called my mom the strictest woman in upstate New York, and you know, kind of felt like, you know, maybe a few states away, maybe a decent experience. I just, you know, kind of on that trip, I fell in love with what that city feel was like, or even the different feel. And I was convinced that that program was very important on that campus. So, you know, the recruiting process was narrow it down to 5 official visits, choose from those 5 official visits. It's much different now, but, and took them all and decided in December of my senior year, after I think it was a week and a half after I took that trip. So it wasn't until November that I went to Hopkins of my senior year. And then, it just felt right in the gut, and you know, made that call and just kind of didn't look back.
And so you were obviously, like Eric said, a stud, as is everyone that goes to Hopkins. And you did, was Coach Haas the head coach the whole time you were there? Or was there a coaching change?
No, I didn't play for Coach Haas at all.
Okay, so you got, that's what I was trying to, because I thought you played for Petro, so I was trying to piece things together.
There are plenty of people that went to Hopkins and are studs.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
I'll name 15 right now. So Coach Haas made, he went back to his alma mater at Carolina the summer before I got there. And so thankfully, Coach Petro recruited me at Cornell. And I got to know him well. I was actually very close to attending Cornell. And just because of his recruitment process, very honestly, he was the best recruiter out of the people I spoke to. Just in terms of his persistence, I always got letters from him. I always heard from him on the phone. He called more than anybody else. So I fell in love with him more than Cornell University. But he fortunately took over that position. So I thank the Lord I knew who my head coach was going. That would have been a big problem for me, just because that's, you know, how my clocks winded. I got to know who I'm playing for. But so he took over and made a pretty seamless transition for me.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that, because Paul, when we had Paul Rabel on here, he said, Eric, if you remember, he said the same thing about Coach Petro, just the relationships and, you know, really, obviously, that's all recruiting is trying to build those relationships. But go ahead, Eric.
I remember when Paul committed.
You do?
Yeah, it was, he was on the phone with Paul. One fall, he took us, you know, the alumni at Hopkins is better than most. I want to say Hobart and Hopkins, I'm going to say.
There you go.
You know, so we got paid for a fall to practice at Raven Stadium. And we went down to Raven Stadium to practice three times a week throughout the fall. That's where the Final Four was that year.
Yeah.
And we got down there, and he never really knew how Petro was going to be in practice. You know, you got to, you know, the veterans can kind of feel it out and say, you know, this is going to be a rough one, or, you know, this, I think we're all right. And we're actually headed into a rough one. You know, he was upset about something, and you know, we never knew what. But so we take this big blue bus, Blue Jays Unlimited bus, down to downtown Baltimore, which is about a 15-minute drive, and the bus is like silent, and everyone's going, you know, it's the, you know, mumbling under their breath, it's the fall, what's his deal, like, we got, you know, this is he gonna run us, blah blah blah, to your typical college athlete stuff. You can't just suck it up and go, you got to try to figure out what's going on. And and then as we're walking out of the tunnel, Seth Tierney got the call. He's like, here it is. And he handed him the phone, and we realized later it was Paul. And he was like, and Paul had tons of huge roots at Carolina. And so tons of family roots down there. So, you know, I think he had been upset thinking Paul was going to go down there. And then he told me he was coming to Hopkins. It was the best practice. We like scrimmage, you know, we rolled the ball out, and you couldn't do anything wrong. So, you know, that's part of one of the reasons I like Paul Rabel so much through his career, that day.
So it was Paul's star that high coming out of high school, because the club scene wasn't really a big deal, right? It was just starting. I remember Paul telling us he played in one club tournament for Crabs, and they put him on brochures for the next 15 years. But really, it wasn't a club thing. It was, I guess it was a high school thing, and I guess all the camps, right?
Yeah, but in the landscape they were in, Paul's playing in a very competitive league, and I think for a high school that, you know, maybe wasn't that impactful up until he became, you know, the bulk or the root of what they were doing. And I mean, he's just, you know, he's enormous and, you know, fast as all heck, and, you know, could dunk a basketball and, you know, shot the ball 1,000 miles an hour. So, you know, Paul will tell you how much he learned as a Hopkins lacrosse player, even in that first year. But what coach doesn't see that and go, yeah, we'll take that. I mean, we can revolve a whole program around that.
How did you get your star? Like, how did people know? Was your high school like a legendary high school? You know, teach me a little bit.
I think thankfully the program I played for was competitive. And I think the the goals that were set year to year were, you know, to win the last game that we play. And like you just mentioned, high school lacrosse was it. We didn't, you know, the club lacrosse was, I think, essentially empires in New York State, and we had empire games. And like Paul, I went to basketball camp. I went to football camp. I went to, you know, one lacrosse camp, and that was it. And so you depended on those high school games. And thankfully I had a coach that had developed a program where, you know, we were playing some teams from Long Island. We were playing, you know, we played Carthage every year. And, you know, I honestly think that, as you put it, that star or that point where, you know, maybe Greg Raymond was pretty good at this sport was playing Carthage and covering Mike Powell, really. And that, and I didn't even do well, you know, I didn't fall on my face six or seven times. Right. So, but you know, we were in state championship games. So college seasons were over and we were playing Lynbrook and, you know, playing the Donegers at Lynbrook or playing, you know, Lafayette and playing the Bucktooths at Lafayette. And so you could kind of see whether or not I could cover and how I could handle the ball. And thankfully there were some folks at those games that thought I was decent.
Amazing. So then you go on, you have an amazing career at Hopkins. You guys win a national title, you know, your senior year, which I'm sure is just unbelievable.
Didn't lose a game. That's pretty remarkable
right.
to me.
Right. What do you remember most from that year?
The people. You know, I know that's a corny thing to say, but, you know, there's guys on that team that I live with. You know, we meet every summer. We have a reunion every summer. And, you know, we've been doing it for 15 years now. I mean, we just love each other. They're brothers. Their pictures hanging on my wall here. My kids call them uncle, you know? So, that's what I sell now. It's what I teach. It's, you know, you can win every game. If relationships aren't cultivated through that experience, you're not going to remember much, you know. Wins and losses are great. You know, I think I'm very proud and thankful that I think, when I ran out of that locker room for the national championship game, I was abundantly prepared and there was nothing I was worried about. There was no concerns. I was ready to lead. I was ready to play. I was ready to just do everything I could possibly do physically and mentally to win. And I just knew I could handle it. You know, I think that's that was one of the things I'm most thankful for, being that prepared in the most high pressure situations. But you know, turn the page, it's, you know, I love that guy. And that's all through, you know, those sacrifices and those growths that you make. So I remember most, you know, funny conversations and locker room stuff. I remember bus trips. I mean, I can tell you the score of every single game of that season. That's just, you know, I got a funky memory, but, you know, and that's we're 16-0. I think we run 5 or 6 one-goal games, you know, wow. A couple in overtime, beat Navy in double overtime that year, Duke in double overtime that year in the regular season. So, you know, we were grinding it out, you know, but besides the actual feeling of taking those fields, competing in a Final Four, it's all about, you know, I remember one of my best buddies, Matt Rakowski. He's the, he's associate head coach at Delaware now. Well, guys, people were still celebrating behind us, holding up the trophy. Everybody's going nuts. And, you know, we were kind of, you know, arm in arm around each other's shoulder, you know, just kind of walking out and bawling, crying because it was over. Not so much because we won. And you know, I think, you know, that speaks wonders to the experience that Petro provided us and Seth Tierney and Bill Dwan, is that we just we created these bonds that I think were the most special thing of that experience.
Sure, you win that. Did you know right away? I mean, that it seemed like pretty seamless just based on your bio, and that coaching was kind of what you wanted to do. I don't know. And where did that kind of come from? Obviously, leaving the game, you played pro for a little bit. So I don't know if you were kind of coaching in between, but when did you kind of know that this was the path for you?
Yeah. And I wonder, how does the world's strictest mom in upstate New York take to her graduate from Johns Hopkins? Wants to coach, you know?
I think the same way I told her, the same way that when I told her I wasn't pre-med in like the first week, you know, I took calculus and I had taken AP calculus in high school, and I got to the first calculus class at Hopkins, and professor came in, didn't introduce himself, just went right at it. And I thought I was, it was a 100-level calculus class, probably the easiest you could take. And I asked five different people if this, I remember being like, is this calculus? You know, I was, I'm like elbowing strangers going, is this a calculus class? Or are you sure? And everyone's shooting me and, you know, their pens are going nuts. And I called my mom that day. I'm like, I don't know if free meds for me. We may have to reevaluate this. So kind of like that. But I mean, she was good with it. It was more about just, you know, one foot in front of the other and, you know, doing things that made me happy. She was strict, but she was also more loving than anything. So, and it was, you know what? It wasn't planned out. It was crazy. I've said this in a couple other podcasts and some interviews. It was coming towards the end and I had had two internships that were high profile internships, things I worked very hard for and things I thought that I wanted to do, right? This was, you know, that's kind of an evil stigma of Division I lacrosse. And if you look across the landscape, you know, look at these teams that are doing so well, that can recruit so well. Obviously the coaching is outstanding, but if you look at the Ivy Leagues, you look at the, you know, the Virginias, the Dukes, the Hopkins, I mean, they're clearly selling something, right? It's that we can provide your connection to that next level. And then, you know, and it's genuine, it's truth, you know? And so I had opportunities and I thought that this was what I was supposed to do. I was supposed to go, you know, into finance, or I was supposed to go into commercial real estate or yada, yada. And early on into those internships, it just wasn't me. And, you know, everyone's saying I can talk for days. And you guys have noticed that already. Like you got to go into sales and trading and da da da. So I do the Morgan Stanley thing and my wife hates it when I talk about this because she's worked at Morgan Stanley for 17 years now, but I couldn't have liked it any less. You know, I was just like, I got to get out of here. And I stuck out the internship, you know, moved on to the next one. It was the same thing. It's like, this just ain't me. And I went in and talked to Coach Petro and I said, you know, I got to be honest, I'm a little worried right now. One, I was terrified about ending the streak of competition. I just didn't want to stop competing. It was what I felt I was best at, what I felt I was made for, really. And so I was worried about that. And then, two, I just said, yeah, I've tried these things and I can keep trying them. I'm not an office guy. I'm not a cubicle guy. I want to be around something different. And, you know, after that conversation, he said, we'll keep looking. And very thankfully, you know, Bill Tierney, who was his mentor at the time, called and said, hey, we got this spot opening up. You got anybody that we should be interested in? And he said, yeah, I got one guy in particular I just had a conversation with. So, and that put my foot in the door. I interviewed at Princeton pretty quickly into the summer, you know, very early in June. And I actually met Coach Tierney at a world team tryout. It was right in Baltimore. It was at UMBC. And we sat in the bleachers. That's how Coach T does it. He's just, yeah, meet me over here, meet me over there, and we'll just, you know, talk about the rest of your life, you know? So, but I met him, and we hit it off. I went to Princeton, worked the camp, and that was that. And so the coaching stuff was great for that first year. And then the recruiting came into play that I hadn't done before. And Coach T had told me, hey, this is where you're going to realize whether or not you're a Division I coach is, can you handle this summer? And so, and I drove all over the place, you know, grinded it out a little bit, and it gets a little tough towards the end, you know, you're worn down, but, and then it was, yes, this is for me.
What makes Tierney great?
Oh God, how much time do you have? If I had to sum it up, probably just the fact that he's a person first, you know, a great person, one that knows how to connect to different and be relatable to different emotional levels, right? Different scenarios that affect different people. Sorry for being redundant. Different ways. I mean, he wasn't this is the way I need to talk to everybody. You know, he's a disciplined guy, but, you know, I think what I saw in him early was he was just so willing to teach me and so willing to answer questions and take me to lunch and, you know, let me go sit in church with him. And, you know, just, it was always, what do you need, Greg? What do you need? And I think I came at a good time. You know, he's pretty well established at that point. So there's nothing on his plate that he really couldn't handle. So I think it was, for me, just seeing him mentor so many people. I mean, if you're to talk to the landscape, I think he's impacted, I mean, the majority of coaches, Division I head coaches, assistant coaches, 2, 3, all of them have had interactions. None of them have been negative. So it's he's a special man.
I mean, it's crazy to think about your coaching tree. I know, I mean, you really, really were only at a couple spots, right, for a significant amount of time, especially Princeton, but Petro playing for him and then Tierney. I mean, how much of each of those guys have you kind of shifted into kind of what you do now? I don't want to overlook your time at Drexel, but obviously those two guys are two of the biggest names in the entire game. And it's funny when you look at Tierney on ESPN, you don't think like, hey, that guy's really nice. You know, you kind of think, hey, I wouldn't want, you might, I would be like, yeah, I'd love my son to play for him, but I would be afraid of him at the same time. So it's funny to hear you share that anecdote.
You don't win that much if you're not competitive, man.
No, I know.
You know? Everyone's like, hey, you got to know how to coach. And, you know, he coached a soccer team at Hopkins when he was there and they won there. He coached at RIT. They won there. You know, he's won everywhere he's gone. You don't do that just by being a great person. I mean, you got to have a compete level as high as any. So, you know, when you see that competition level, that's what I love about him is the, you know, kind of that Jekyll and Hyde. And when he's in the moment, I mean, he's as fierce a competitor as anybody, you know, and people ask me, cause I know him, you know, when's he going to retire? When's he going to, I'm like, never. He's just, he loves competing more than anybody I've ever met. So, I mean, does he love coaching? Yeah. But he loves winning too, you know? So I think, you know, for me, how much I took away from Coach Petro from a day-to-day preparation standpoint was huge. I think the things that I learned from Coach T on how to sell an institution and you know, he kind of debunked that whole thing for me where, you know, people think it's easy to recruit here because it's Princeton. It's not. It's hard. And it will be everywhere you go. But I learned from him, you know, and this is something I'll take with me my whole life. I think you can win anywhere. You know, I don't believe it to be, and this is, I think, against the grain of what a lot of people understand or think is, do you need facility? Do you need money? Do you need, I mean, I think you need belief and you need to instill a culture. And, you know, I think what I saw in Petro, he did a lot of that. But Hopkins is just so established, right? And it had been that longevity of tradition and winning. And here's what kind of is supposed to happen here, right? That, so Petro dealing with that was, I think, a little bit different than what T had to deal with at Princeton, because that's all him, you know, it was, he went there and flipped that joint. And I mean, was it a great place beforehand? Yeah, it's Princeton, but I mean, they didn't win till he got there. Maybe way back when, I don't want to get my foot in my mouth, but I mean, 1992 is the first, and that's him. And, you know, that's Metzi and all that. So those differences, can you handle Petro? Can you handle the pressure? Can you handle the tradition? Can you do it with class and dignity and outwork people? And, you know, he showed that discipline in a tremendous fashion. And then, you know, what I took from Princeton, I think, you know, helped more at a place like Hobart that needed a little bit of revamping and needed to get re-energized. And, you know, I saw that fire and tea in order to do that at Princeton. So that's helped me as much as anything here.
Yeah, let's talk about that, how you ended up at Hobart then and your challenge there and what attracted you to it. Legendary place, right? Especially as a D3 school when they won all those championships, right? Coach had one of the guys on his staff who was part of that 10 in a row or whatever it was there.
Yeah, very prideful alumni.
Very proud of that school. Yeah. What was the challenge for you, and where were you in their journey from D3 to D1? How many coaches before you, and then, how did you see the potential there?
You know, I was at a I was at a really good place in my career at Princeton. I was – we were fortunate to have some really successful defenses and some very successful years in that. I think my product helped help my name a little bit, which, you know, was a team thing and a program thing for sure. But, you know, I was getting head coaching opportunities and getting interviews for places and going to a bunch and just kind of coming back to Princeton and with that same mentality. And it was, you know, Chris Bates was my boss at the time, and it turned into more just, you know, really good friend. And we kind of at Drexel, he was the guy, and he had done at Drexel kind of what T did at Princeton. And then we went over back to Princeton together, and we really had to do that thing together, you know, taking over after John Wooden is tough. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I think we did a good job in a unified front there. So, and I was leaning on him hard in these interviews, just being like, I'd come back from so-and-so and he's, what do you think? And I'm like, it's all right. You know, I just don't think they care about the sport that much. It doesn't feel like it does here. It doesn't feel like it does at Hopkins. Maybe I'm, you know, just being biased and, you know, being a whiner, but I want it to be the most important thing on the campus. You know, I want it to be one, if not one of the most important programs on the campus. I want tradition. I want a network. I want an endowment. I want ways to fundraise. And I don't know if it's there or not. And then when I come up to Hobart, and my wife's an alum. So, I mean, it's kind of like the stars align. My wife's an alum. I'm from upstate New York. My high school coach won 4 national championships at Hobart. There is countless Corning, New York, all Americans that have come here to Hobart and had exceptional careers. I came to Hobart lacrosse camp growing up, but it's a place I knew well, you know, and, they were established Division I. They had moved on. They kind of had a riff about 5 years prior where it's, are we going back? Are we staying here? And trust me, interviews, what questions do you have? That's the first one. I'm like, listen, I got to know, is this thing solidified? And they cut me off. They're like, yeah, nothing's happening there. So, but I think after having that interview experience and then coming up here, I sat at a table, guys, with the president, the vice president, the head of admissions, the head of financial aid, this dean, that dean. There were 5 players there. There was parents from the program there. There's probably like 25 people total. And they smashed me for like 3 hours. And they were great questions. Just questions about, you know, not – you know, what do you think? Can we win it all? It's how can this program be solidified as a national contender every single year? What are you going to do? Right. And it was, they weren't nice. They weren't friendly. They were serious. And so I went up there interested based on all those, you know, all those key points I just told you. And plus with your wife involved and her family's up here, my family's up here. It's not just, hey, let's pick up and go. It's, you know, it's a team thing. She's got to be on board too. And she was excited before I even interviewed. And, you know, I wasn't, I went in with no preconceived notion or judgment as I'm going to evaluate this as it goes. That's how I got to do it. So, and then I left and I called her and I'm like, you know, I want this thing. Mm. And she's like, why? I'm like, 'cause they love this sport. They have to. We were in there for 3 days talking BS. I mean, they asked me every single question until I had like 6 Gatorades or empty bottles around. I was I was dehydrated. I felt like I played in a game. And I'm like, if I'm this exhausted after an interview, that means I'm going to have full support and doing what I need to do to make this thing run.
Yeah. And obviously, too, I mean, for our listeners, I'm sure most of them know, but, you know, with really men's lacrosse being the only Division I program on the campus. Am I correct in that, Greg?
Yes.
So obviously all eyes on you guys as far as being able to bring, you know, those attention dollars, as EB you like to say. And you've had great success. You know what I mean? And obviously over the past few years, as Eric had mentioned, what has been like the biggest challenge for you? You know, obviously going there, you know, scholarships, things, everything's a little bit different at Hobart than it's run at other places. So for you, like what's been like the biggest maybe surprise or challenge as you've tried to get the program kind of back? And you've done it, obviously.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I think it shifted, really. When it first started here, believe it or not, it was the weather. I mean, and I thought, you know,
it's cold. Yeah.
I'm from up here. Everyone's like, it's cold, you know? And even when I went to Hopkins on a cold day, everyone's like, what are you cold for? You're from upstate New York. And I'm going, well, it's still cold out. I mean, I don't understand that, you know? Everybody's cold when it gets cold. It doesn't make any sense. So, but I didn't think it would impact us that much. And so where you're trying to prepare for, you know, your first contest, which is February 6th or 13th, you know, and you're going into Penn State and you've been outside to practice twice. It's tough. It's tough, man. And thankfully you got tough kids and, you know, the way that we've structured our culture is based on a lot of those values that would not have you shying away from that opportunity, that, you know, whatever happens, happens. Where life ain't fair. We don't care. Let's move forward here. And so, but still, you ain't handling the ball like that team. You know, you can't shoot as accurately. Your skill development's not the same. Your footing's a little bit off. You're underprepared. So it would take us to mid-season, really. And I think it does for most. But to even get into a routine where this is the time where we practice. We can go out there for an hour and a half, an hour and 45. And here's our scouting report. I mean, we had to shift things. You know, the field's not plowed. It is plowed. It's, you know, there were some practices, guys, that we could go out for 15 minutes and then we'd have to come in for a half hour. So we'd go out, we'd practice, we'd come in, we'd warm up, we'd go out and practice. And I'm like, this is nuts. You know, this is not, we got to do something. We're not going to.
Why? Because it was too cold?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's under 10 degrees yeah. And the wind's blowing. So, and you know, from an NCAA regulation standpoint, it's not safe. You gotta go back in and warm up. And so our routine was a mess. And, you know, there were some Friday practices before games where I'd look at, you know, Coach Poyon at the time and Coach Hirsch at the time. I'm like, we got to practice today. Like we can't just have a pregame. We've got to practice. So this is going to be a 2-hour stick work, yada, yada, yada. If it affects us tomorrow, whatever, we got to get better. So yeah. That was the first issue. And then, you know, I sat down after, fortunately, again, we worked more on our culture in those moments. And we took that and made it, we flipped it and allowed it to give us strength. And so we found a way to get some wins, especially late in the season. And we found a way to win a league and what I thought was a very competitive league with, you know, Bryant doing their thing and Bobby Moe and St. Joe's, we had work to do. And you know, that's the thing I'm most proud of, that, that first year we started 0-5. And we went to the conference championship and we beat St. Joe in the conference and they pounded us in the beginning of the season. And we wouldn't let our guys do anything different than, again, keep moving forward. So thankfully with some momentum, then we can call some alums with this tradition, which is goes back to the interview process and go, listen, if you want to win, right? If you want us to be successful, we've got to have a place to get better. We have to. And there's space right over here. We just got to get the go and let's put an indoor facility up so that we can improve. And recruiting improves, you know, our daily schedule improves. And thankfully, you know, we raised $6 million in about 4 months with wow. some great folks in the way. We put an indoor facility on the campus. And, you know, I'm walking in with one of my seniors last year. And we're talking some things out. We're getting ready for practice. And I just said, I'm like, how great is this thing? You know, and you got to be careful because guys get softer. There's no doubt. Yeah. You know, and then you go out in the cold and they're like, it's freezing. I'm like, we're in Geneva. It is. Yeah, of course it is. But so you got to balance it out a bit. But he goes, Coach, I honestly think this place has won us games. I honestly believe that. He's like, I've been more prepared for the first game of the season the last 2 years than I ever have been. So, and then that shifted. And now it's about combating the athletic scholarship. You know, it's the greater landscape on how important liberal arts educations are and what they cost at a private school. And without athletic scholarship here, we need to find specific profiles of recruits. And so first we handle ours in terms of what we want, and inevitably, you know, money comes into play there. So, you know, I think we found a good formula and we're doing a decent job with it, you know, but it's something we revisit consistently is, you know, what it costs to not just go to Hobart, what it costs to go to college, you know, what it costs to go to a private liberal arts school, which like Hopkins, I told you, like Hobart, these schools, they pay off, but they cost. And you can get a family to commit to what the process looks like, then you can do great things. That's just, those are a lot of long conversations.
Yeah. It's funny. I want to try to get into kind of what's going on this year, but just hearing Greg talk and about my own experience, personal experience at Robert Morris. And that was like basically a weekly occurrence in Pittsburgh, but we played Hobart my last year coaching in college. And I don't know what the facility was called at the time, Greg, and you might've been the coach at the time. I know Pete was on staff, but we practiced before a game in a gym. It was like a sport court, gray court, because the field wasn't plowed and it had snowed. Like it was our spring break, believe it or not. We played Siena and Hobart on our spring break. It was the most, we lost 8-6. I remember, like, you know, it was one of those games where you, you lose and you're like, I got to get on the damn bus. I cannot feel my feet. And you're telling your players to be tough. You're like, you know, you can't control it. Don't worry about it. But like, I couldn't feel shit. You know what I mean? Just being honest.
That was our home, man.
Yeah.
That's where we played. We practiced there constantly. We would do two-a-days in there. Mm-hmm. And the smell, that we'd have our guys in full sweats. The first guy that complained, we'd run him. Just like, this has got to be us, you know. But then we'd leave as a coaching staff and we'd go, we got to get the hell out of there. You know, somebody's going to get hurt. This is crazy, you know. So but yeah, that was our home. And you know, it's funny, the year we hosted the conference tournament, we had to practice in there. Mm-hmm. It was just pouring rain and we were shuffling teams through that, through Boswell Field. And we gave up our practice time on Boswell just because all we had to do was really walk through some things. So we're going into a championship game with Brian and we practiced in the field house and I looked at a couple seniors and I'm like, this is where it all started, man. I mean, look at where we are right now. Smell how awful it smells in here. You know, so this is so an awful place, man, but that's a character builder for sure.
So talk about the last year, because it's been wild for everybody. Obviously, I think as a country, we were blindsided by COVID and just kind of didn't really realize maybe what was happening. I think some people thought, oh, okay, we'll stop here. We'll pause the season for a little bit and we'll be back in a few weeks. But it didn't work out that way. And you know, obviously this season in a lot of ways is going to be different. Hopefully everybody gets it in. How did you guys handle this? And then what are sort of the expectations for this year? How are, you know, has your conference announced plans yet? Do you have a schedule? Are you going to play any out of conference games? What's sort of the plan?
It's been nuts. So if you go back to March, you know, we're in a path there where, you know, I think we had the best team we had here. And it was clicking in a extraordinary fashion. Just every day was a blast. Some practices were, they were so competitive, we didn't have to blow a whistle. You know, we just, as coaches, we're sitting there, Coach Brundage, Coach Turry and I are just watching and going, oh, that's great, or oh, that's great. I mean, we weren't coaching. They were just dialed in. And we had veterans, we had great leadership. And then, you know, crashing halt the week we played Robert Morris, actually. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think rebounding from that was a task in itself and trying to figure out the best path for, I mean, people are going in this, you know, this pandemic where, you know, what was difficult? Well, you know, what have you guys done? Blah, blah, blah. The hardest for me was the turnover in year and losing these great senior products. You know, because we didn't have a grad school, a limited grad school at the time, and there were other options out there, and the transfer portal blowing up. It was just, and the promotion of it from he's in the transfer portal, it was just toxic. And it's like, why are we talking about this so much? And why are we pulling young men away from the institutions are supposed to be finishing their careers from. That was hardest for me because, you know, we had guys we're very close to that, you know, couldn't see light in coming back to Hobart for whether it's financial reasons or this and that. So it was hard to say goodbye to some guys without that, you know, that kind of that final thing, that whether it's a loss or a win at the end of the season, or that, you know, okay, it's over. Let's move on. Let's hug each other. Let's talk it out. And that was tough. We spend so much time on these relationships, and they're meaningful. You know, we aim them to be. It's how we recruit. It's how we coach. And we put dramatic emphasis on our senior class. We do every single year, and we tell them repeatedly, you know, we don't go anywhere. We go as far as you take us. That's as simple as I can put it. It's how I believe. And again, it's how we coach. So saying bye to those guys early was tough. And, you know, we got one playing at Maryland and we wish him the best. He's a tremendous player. One playing at Delaware, you know, we wish him the best. He's a tremendous player. And so we've moved on from that, from those emotions, but that was tough. And then, you know, when we get into this fall season now and the question marks of, well, what are we doing? What's the COVID protocol? You know, you're practicing in bunches and you're practicing this. You can't do this. You can do this. Yada, yada, yada. We had to teach our guys how to actually do what they say they're doing. And it's very easy. This is human nature, is that people are, you know, so full of crap that they're like, yeah, we're going to live day to day and we're going to, you know, be in the present. And no one is. And then everyone tries to predict the future. And this is when COVID's going to end. This is when da, da, da. And you just can't. It's not the way you can do this thing. We had to convince our guys to do this a day at a time and to be in the adaptation mode. So this is different. Stop saying it. This is new. Stop saying it. React. Like, figure it out. You know, everybody wants sympathy right now. Everybody wants empathy. It's worldwide. You know, let's shut up about it. Move forward. This season is going to be really challenging for 1,000 reasons. So again, life ain't fair, man. We don't care. If you have a way to deal with things, if you talk about it, at Hobart, we talk about being an underdog. We talk about getting the next play. And we talk about doing the right over the easy every single day. Those are our core values. And, you know, you throw a pandemic in front of it. And I have lots of guys that are, you know, antsy and whiny and da-da-da. I'm like, well, you're not doing anything that we talk about. So who's not an underdog against a worldwide pandemic? Who's succeeding through this? You know, who's not impacted negatively? Who's not faced with challenges every single day? So stop talking about it. Move forward. Right. And then who can't see that being in the present is of the utmost importance right now? If you look ahead, if you try to predict the season, I mean, I got to a point with that in our scheduling. You just ask, where's the scheduling? I don't even know yet. Mm. We need the NEC to come back with a proposal that we put out there and yada, yada. But I tried to get this schedule set in November. And then it all fell apart. Then I tried to get it set again in December and all fell apart. And I'm losing my mind. And thankfully, I married well. My wife's like, why don't you just do what you tell your guys to do every day? Oh. And I'm like, yeah, it's great advice. She's like, stop whining. All right. You're trying to predict the future. You can't do it. Right. You know? So be here with your kids. It's nice. You got good kids, right? Or if you have an opportunity to be on the field with your team, take advantage. And I know that sounds like an after-school special, guys, and I just believe it in my heart of hearts. If you can do day one, and then tomorrow's day one, and then tomorrow's day one, if you can do it that way, then you're just going to have much more happiness and much more success. Because the way that this season, the way that the fall went, the way that this season's going to go is, hey, I know I said we had a game tomorrow, but we don't. We got it tonight, you know. Or I know I said we're playing on Saturday. Games moved to Sunday. I know I said game's canceled. We're playing that one in May. Practice was supposed to be at 4 p.m., but we got to go at 6 a.m. tomorrow. So, you know, do we want to talk about how unfair that is, or do we want to just go have a great day together? So, and easier said than done, man. I got guys in my office that are struggling with this. They are, you know, they're
situation- would be in your office, just so you know that, Greg. I think I feel like I might need to talk to you after this, just a little talk myself off the ledge here.
Come on in, man. You know, it's a long conversation. There's different scenarios. The home situation's hard, or just being in their dorm all day, every day is hard. You know, they're just wrapped up in their thoughts, man. And human nature again is, you know, survival mode. Let's get to what's wrong? Everything, what do I have to worry about? You lose sight of all that you have in front of you, all that you have from an opportunity standpoint. So you got to revisit it. You got to talk about it. You got to be honest with your emotions. But at the same time, if you keep looking for an out in terms of, you know, somebody feels sorry for me, you're not going to find it. It's not out there right now because everyone needs that. So the people that are good, the teams that are going to succeed this year are going to find the fortitude in that adaptation. Can you enjoy your process even though it's a pain in the ass? Can you be on this field right now? You know, we have this philosophy that we talk about with our guys, and it's, you know, we find metaphors each year, a different one each year that we can link to, you know, and we're talking a lot about shrinking our world down and all the things that could cloud our vision. And especially right now for a college kid, they're there anyway, you know, pandemic or not, you know, people are like, how distracted are your guys right now? I'm like, well, last year there wasn't this virus and they were really distracted then too. And the year before that, you know, so there's always, what are they doing socially? You know, is everybody on board academically, you know, yada, yada. So we're asking them, can you shrink your world down? Can you put your focus in between our yellow lines? So how do we do that? Right. And that's what our season is right now. It's, you know, let's get to the lowest common denominator, right? Let's make the Buzz Williams at our IMLCA convention. I loved it. He talked about the rate of learning being greater than the rate of change. So we told our guys that, hey, listen, if we're not playing this game here, we're playing it over there, and we're not playing it at this time, we're playing it at that time. Guess what? There's still an 80-second shot clock, and we still got to clear the ball in this amount of time. These are the rules. This is when you go offsides. This is how we have to substitute. This is, so can our IQ continue to grow even though these changes are coming at us? And who's most important? Your family, your closest friends, your education, and this program. Spend your time on just that. Stop trying to end COVID. You can't do it. Stop trying to predict when our next game is. You can't do it. Just be right here, right now, as best you can. I thought it was a superpower for a college student, but it's a human superpower.
Yeah.
If you can be in the present, man, you're helping or controlling half of the negative emotions you'll probably inflict on yourself. And that's what the world is right now. And you're seeing selfishness come out like crazy. Everyone's sick of this, right? I'm sick of it. You're sick of it. And everyone's like, me, you know, I'm done. You hear coaches in our department, no, I want to practice then. Or I want to get, you know, I'm done being lenient. Like, you can't be. Yeah. This is when human nature needs to be at an all time high. So long-winded way of saying, I could talk about this for days, but you know, I don't know what our schedule's like yet. Most likely it will be an all conference schedule. A lot of conference games are really tough to come by right now. I just know I got my team in a weight room tomorrow and in an individual session, and I can't wait.
Mm-hmm. You know, the biggest, and I agree with all that, and it's a lot, like you said, well done's better than well said, and all that stuff is really well said, but it's a lot harder to do than it is to say, especially for 19 to 23-year-old kids. That's why it's good to have guys like you, Greg, that can install that culture, embrace it, challenge them, hold them accountable to do it each day. Hold myself accountable. It's not an easy thing to do it, but I think the big word there is opportunity. Everyone's team, their opportunity looks different, right? You guys might have individuals, but Syracuse just rolled out a 12-game schedule. They're going to be, so I think envy is also the big thing, you know, and the big issue at the high school level, dumb it down to us, you know, there's a lot of high schools in this area, the Mid-Atlantic and the East Coast and West Coast, that don't know if they're going to have a season. So that's the other part of it. what's been great, you know, for Eric and I to see all these lacrosse schedules come out, because you know it's happening. And Eric, you know, your son's going to get to have a season. It's not maybe what you want it to be, but it's better than the alternative. Mm-hmm. And that's for sure. But I think the big challenge with our young people is just managing expectations around, because all of them had so many stuff taken away, you know? And so I appreciate you sharing that. Cause that, for me, I almost felt like I was in a therapy session there. Eric, cause I've been texting and calling Eric. Cause again, I'm trying to control a lot, and there's just so much that you can't control in these situations.
You gotta be right with the dude in the mirror, you know, more than anything. That's the hardest conversation, you know. Well done, better than well said. If that conversation ain't on point and it's not honest, I mean, so we don't want our guys to ignore emotion. We don't want our guys to, you know, fake being happy when they're not, you know, but at least if you're honest with that process, you can move on from it a little bit quicker. And,
do you get excited or envious? Which are the two emotions when you see, oh, the Southern Conference, they look like they're playing full schedule. Those guys got like 18 games. And then you have others, you know, where they're maybe only getting 8 or 10. Or some not, you know, nothing. Your conference, you don't even know what's going on. So when you see the rollouts, does that get you excited? Or does it get you angry, envious? What's the emotion?
It's got to give you some ammo going into these meetings, right, and saying, look what everyone else is doing.
You got to keep in mind, what you're battling here is, you know, a kind of a three-pronged protocol. You're going with what an NCAA is asking you to do and what they're telling your administration is safe and not, you know, what state you're in and yada, yada. And then you're going with your league. And so what's the league up to? These are our most important games. Can we make sure that we're playing these or extending these? And then this is the toughest part. It's your institutional protocol. So my league can tell me this they can tell me this, and I could go to my boss and she can go, well, we're not starting till March. I don't know what to tell you. And it's not safe for this and that. So that's the difficult part is each institution is operating under a different wavelength or operating under a different protocol. And that's what I've noticed up until this point. So it would be the first one, to be honest. It's any progress, brother, is good. You know, anything I see, you know, I see a football game being played, you know, if I'm watching college hoops, this is awesome. You know, and I just saw the women's Baylor coach, the head coach at Baylor. She talked about a situation that we're going to run into here. It's inevitable that she's like, you know, I don't think they could practice a couple times, and they went into, you know, the number six team in the country. And I think they either lost to a quote unquote inferior opponent or one that wasn't ranked. And they a couple people were in quarantine or they couldn't. She's like, I just don't know how to coach right now. It's that league's doing things differently than we're doing it. And so how do we compete on, you know, when we're falling under different protocol ramification, whatever, however you want to determine it. So those will come for sure. But at least I see them playing a game, you know, at least you talk to our guys, man. We play the Sisters of the Poor in the Wegmans parking lot right now. I mean, that's just how antsy we are. So are we bummed? Yeah. But that they're playing maybe and we're not. It's, again, something I can't control. And we're in that more of that 8-game schedule realm. That's who we may have to be. So, but when that first game hits, my group's going to be prepared.
Yeah. We can't wait.
I have one question before we go, because my kid is at Marist. Are parents going to be allowed at these games? What do you think?
Not in March, I don't think. I don't know. It depends on how this vaccine's going to roll out, man. And it depends on, and how healthy this country can get. You know, it's right now I would say no. And because no one wants to be – that's the difficulty, right, is no one wants to be responsible for this is for the unknown. And that's what this is. This virus has become what you believe versus scientific fact. It's the craziest thing. And, you know, people are like, well, this works to stop the virus. And I was with my kids in the park, and I told you guys I could ramble. I was with my kids in the park and we're just playing outside. It was a nice day up here, and you know, a stranger walked by, an older woman. She seemed extremely nice and intelligent. She was just in awe of my kids. They were all running around. You know, I got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. They're full of energy. You know, they're banging heads with each other. They're crying. They're laughing. She's like, look at, you know, your kids. This is great. I'm like, yeah, you know, they're great. How old are they? And I said, she's 5, he's 3. And she said, great. And she goes, you know this vaccine that's coming out? And I said, yeah. She goes, if anybody in your family takes it, your whole family will probably die. And I was like, what? Oh, the whole family? You know, how does that even work? You know? And so now I'm all jammed up. And obviously I know that can't be true. I would hope anyway. And so it's the belief in this thing and the unknown is like, it's got everybody so tied up to move forward that I would be reluctant to see. I think we'd be reluctant to see some fans at home games just because who knows where they're coming from. And so, that would be it until I think the percentages of the infection rate go down a little bit. And the New York State and all these states get a little bit healthier. So hope, fingers crossed, you know, we creep into April when teams are starting to roll, things are a lot different.
Yeah, let's hope. So. I know I got some parents. We're talking about just going to the CVS next door and, you know, climbing on a roof to watch. You know what I mean? Hey, because parents are in on this too. You know, we're part of the family and we want to see our kids compete, and it's a small window. And to have it taken away from the kids is brutal, and to have it taken away from the parents sucks too. It really does.
Okay. You can tell that lady you met in the park. I got my first vaccine shot yesterday, and
everybody's still alive.
I feel good.
What about your family?
I haven't checked in my wife in an hour. She's downstairs with both kids, so she may be living, but I don't know.
Keep in mind, it was the entire family.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, well, Coach, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I mean, you gave us an hour of your time. That was more than we could have ever asked. It was great to have you on. We'll have to do it again. Good luck this season. If we want to give out some social media or anything for people, if they want to follow the program or you, what should we promote?
I haven't been on Instagram, Twitter, or anything in 3 years, and I'm thinking my SID hates it, but it's the best move I've ever made. At Hobart Lacrosse, both Instagram and Twitter, if they want to check that stuff out. But you know, I'd rather those people open a book and get a little bit more intelligent.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, well, that's Coach Greg Raymond. That's
Coach. Thank you,
Dane Smith.
Thank you, guys.
Eric Pickle.
Appreciate it.
We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, Coach.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.